Welcome, everybody. It's time again for the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective. The coaching perspective with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller. Hey, Doug.
Hey, Paul. Good to be with you in studio here today. And welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. Our topic for today is using technology and knowledge for a competitive advantage. And we have with us in the studio our guest today, David Hilgendorf, speaker, trainer, and coach. And he's going to explain to us all the things that technology can do when it works. When it works is what we're going to talk about. Well, look, let's just jump right into the show here. And I'm anxious. David's a new acquaintance of mine. I'm fascinated. He has got a very interesting background. He has one foot in the high-tech world and one foot in the motorcycle world. So go figure on that one. And, of course, his heart's in the coaching world. So there we are. So, David, tell us a little bit about yourself. What did you do prior to what you're doing now?
Well, I grew up in a family of professional business people. My grandfather owned a roofing company. My father is a CPA. And my stepfather owns a dairy farm, of all things. And having lived around people that owned businesses and ran businesses my whole life, it was always something that I aspired to do in my own life. And so I went to business school, got a business degree, and when I got out of college, all the jobs were in technology. So that's where I landed to get my experience, to cut my teeth and earn my my qualifications, I guess, as it were, to do business. And what I liked about the tech industry was the fast growth and change. You know, they're very adept at change. They're very good at communication and sharing knowledge. And I went through that, you know, spent 10 years in that industry, and it collapsed. And this is in the dot-com era. I was in the Bay Area. And when it collapsed, I just kind of just looked at my personal life and said, you know, what do I really, really want to do? What's my heart in? And I was kind of dabbling in different things. As a bit of a gamer growing up, I went in and did some work for Sony and did some game testing for the PlayStation world. And worked on their online, coming from the tech industry, worked on their online for the PlayStation 2. Then you know, I didn't really like that company. Decided I'd work for, do a little bit of contract work for Microsoft and did some work there. And then I ended up falling into the motorcycle industry, which is something I've been doing since I was a kid and you know, really kind of a passion. And ended up doing coaching, training, branding, marketing, sales, you know, everything you can possibly imagine under the sun in the motorcycle industry, and realized in that industry that it's very archaic, it's very backwards, it's very change averse, it's run by, you know, families, sometimes been in the business for 50 plus years. They don't understand the value of technology. They don't understand, you know, the need for change in order to grow their business. And that's where the light went on. And coaching was like, hey, I can take my business knowledge, I can take my tech knowledge, I can take my experience in these low tech industries and help people do better and grow faster.
You know, when you say that the two areas are so different, the high tech and the motorcycle, Is the motorcycle itself, the machine, is that up to date in terms of high tech, and what you're saying isn't is the way in which they do business?
That's a great question, because the motorcycles are becoming very high tech, and yeah. The new ones that are coming out nowadays, even, you know, from brands you wouldn't expect. Harley Davidson has Bluetooth, and they have, you know, stereo systems integrated. I mean, it's almost like a car. It's got the same basic. You got ABS brakes. You've got fuel injection. You've got ride by wire, which means when you twist the throttle, a cable doesn't activate. A computer activates your throttle. So, I mean, all the technology is there, and it's trickled down from the car industry. So the manufacturers are building high-tech machines. The last Ducati I rode had an LCD screen on the dashboard to control the bike. I mean, it was crazy. So the technology's there. The industry just isn't changing. The ownership's, you know, it's not changing as fast. It's not as adept at using the technologies that are available to them in order to grow their business and adapt to the modern market.
So the technology. So that's an interesting perspective. So mm-hmm. We're really, when we talk technology, we can think manufacturing technology, which is up to date in the motorcycle industry, which is what you're saying. We can think technology that's available for the sales and servicing efforts, which may not be as up to date. And we can think technology in the way in which people market and advertise and work with their customers.
Absolutely.
whole different areas, isn't it?
Yeah, and every one of those aspects of your business can be improved, and you can use technology to improve your marketing via social media, via search engine optimization, via all the bandied words that you hear about marketing nowadays. Nobody's marketing in the yellow pages anymore. Nobody's sending, and of course I'm exaggerating, nobody. But if you're trying to reach the modern consumer, the yellow pages isn't where you're going to find them. You know,
right.
You're not going to find them via if you're in the motorcycle industry and you're blasting postcards out. It's probably not going to be beneficial because not every household owns a motorcycle. Most of them aren't going to be interested in that. So you have to be very specific about how you target. And online, you're able to target very specifically demographics. You can tell. I mean, Google keeps metrics on everything. They know if you searched for motorcycle, they know to send a motorcycle ad to you. Right? They get it. They understand that. And so you're wasting less money searching for the customer that needs your product by hitting people that are definitely, for sure, using your product.
Interesting. Well, look, okay, so you've got one foot in the motorcycle industry, one foot in the high tech.
Mm-hmm.
Now you get into coaching. What happened there?
So that's a great question. Like I said, it's the business background. It's I always wanted to own my own business, and I always wanted to just kind of take it myself and run with it. And I ran into, ironically enough, a franchise broker a few years back at a job fair of all things. I was just looking to see what was available in the area, so I went to a job fair, ran into a franchise broker, and I said, I'm really not looking at buying a business at this point in time. However, keep in touch with me because that might change.
Sure.
And she was real good about pinging me every couple of months. And after about a year, I said, I might be interested in looking at buying a business at this point. So let's take a look and tell me what you do and how it works. And so she went through the process as a business broker and of just asking me a lot of questions, which is really what a coach does, right? Ask a lot of questions about what you like, what you do, where's your history, what's your passion. And she came up with about four companies. And the day before I was supposed to meet her to discuss the four companies, she calls me at like 7 o'clock at night. She's like, I'm gonna ask you just a few more questions. And she says, I see you've got some coaching background, you got a business background. Tell me a little bit more about that. And my coaching background in the motorcycle industry is actually coaching people how to ride motorcycles. And coaching is coaching. I don't care whether you're coaching somebody how to play a piano or how to sing better or how to play football or how to run a business. Coaching is observing, it's listening, and it's giving feedback, and it's holding people accountable to their actions. And that's really all it is. Doesn't matter what you're coaching. And so when she heard that I was coaching motorcycles, and I had coached over 6,000 people on how to ride motorcycles more effectively, she's just pinging me on that. Like, what about this and what about that? And I'm like, I know she's up to something. So I meet her the next day, and she's like, I added another business to your list, and it was a coaching franchise. And so I started looking at these franchises that she offered me, and it was after about 2 days of research on these, I realized that was the only one that made sense. Like, coaching is the only one that made sense. The other franchises were retail establishments, and they were, child services, and just things that I was not really, my heart wasn't there. One was an IT franchise, which is something I had a ton of expertise in, but I got out of that. I wasn't interested in going back. And so the coaching franchise made a ton of sense. And when I started meeting the people in the coaching franchise, what I found is that they're really genuine, right? People who do coaching want to help other people do better. And every coach that I've met since then, whether they're in my franchise or outside like yourself, has the same respect for business. They're like, I see your business is successful and I want you to do better and I can help you with that. And I think that really rang a bell for me, when I started talking to people who coach, that it's how do I take the skills and the knowledge that I have and how do I use those to help other people? And that's what I've been doing with motorcycling, helping other people get better at their skills. And that's what I've been doing in the IT industry, helping people get better at their skills. And so it was just a natural transition. Doesn't seem like it makes any sense, but when you look at your history and you go back and you go, God, everything kind of just falls into place. It's just one step and leads to the next and one step leads to the next. And before you know it, business coaching took my business degree, took my technology experience, and took my motorcycle experience, and it just wrapped it all up into a perfect package.
Perfect. So tell our audience a little bit about a coaching franchise. What kind of training did you get? What did you buy besides a name?
Yeah,
absolutely. What was in the package, and how does it look looking back on it? How many years ago was that?
I signed up about 2 years ago. Okay. And again, I started talking to the franchise broker maybe 3 years ago. The package that I bought into is a program called Focal Point. There are several franchises out there for coaching. They use different curriculums. What I liked about the Focal Point franchise, it uses a curriculum written by Brian Tracy. So if you're familiar with business success and you've read or listened to any seminars or workshops on business success, you've probably heard of Brian Tracy.
Everybody has.
So if you like Brian Tracy and you believe in what he's positioning, and you understand that he's helped thousands of companies, Fortune 500 companies, be more successful, then if it works for them, it'll work for you. And so when I went in and I looked at the curriculum, and what I was buying is two things. One is curriculum. I don't want to have to write my own curriculum. I don't want to have to start from scratch. Having a curriculum, it takes the basic fundamentals of business that you would learn as your MBA class, wraps it up into a nice package. You can go through it modularly and deal with just the issues that apply to your business. That just made sense to me, right? I like the modular, the systematic methodology of it. Made a ton of sense to me, okay? And it's a building block process. You start with, laying a base layer and then, building on top of that. The second thing, the more important thing, is the coaching network. And really what that franchise got me was 300 other coaches who have different expertise areas than I have. And when I go out and I look at my knowledge, it's very specific. And most people's knowledge is very specific. Your knowledge in your business is very specific. And each coach's knowledge is specific. And so when you have that ability to, hey, I don't know, that much about accounting. Let's say I'm not a CPA. I grew up with a dad who was a CPA. I know a little bit, but I'm not an expert. But I have many coaches in my organization who were CPAs before they became coaches. So if I have a question about accounting, I can reach out to them and say, hey, here's my issue. How would you address this? And we have a conversation. We have a dialogue and we solve problems together. So I like the collaborative effort of our coaching organization that I didn't see that in other places.
And, I sort of heard you say the same thing about high tech. When you talked about first getting into high tech, you mentioned that it was a collaborative industry. There was a lot of sharing of knowledge and ideas. But you didn't see that in the motorcycle industry.
No.
And coaching resonated back to that for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. I'm a firm believer, and I'll tell this. I told an HR manager, my HR manager once, when I had a job. I said, my job is to engineer myself out of my job. And she did not understand that. As an HR director, she did not understand why I would want to eliminate my own position. And I said, in my mind, I don't want to be doing the same thing for the rest of my life, right? I want to work on a new problem. I want to solve a new issue. I want to help somebody be better. I want to just keep growing and learning, right? That's what I want to do. And she didn't understand that. She's like, yeah, just be good at what you do and just do that, right? And that was like her mindset. And I see that a lot out there where people just get stuck in the, this is my job and this is what I do. And they don't really think outside of that, right? They don't really think about how can I make my job better? How can I make my job more efficient? How can I teach somebody else my job so that I can go on vacation for a week and not have to worry about twice as much work when I come back, right? They don't think about that. So going back to what your question, when I look at the technology sphere, people are very collaborative. One of my main goals was to write documentation for everything that we did so that I didn't have to re-explain it to every single person, right? They could just go and look up the answer. Simple, right? Problem solving. That's what Google does, right? That's their job, is to just document information. That's what they do. And they're doing really well at it, right? But I go into the motorcycle industry and they're more closed-minded. They're like, hey, I can't share any knowledge about my product or what I'm doing because somebody's going to steal it and run away with it and use it against me. It's like that negative vibe. And that's just what I got, the feeling that I got. And I'm not saying everybody in that industry is like that. There are certainly people who are collaborative. But I didn't see it as much. And in the coaching, coming back to that, everybody there is really looking to help other people. It's not really about myself. It's about what can I do for you?
Yeah, I love that orientation. Mm-hmm. And I agree with you. I have never met a coach who wasn't basically motivated by how do I help other people. Yeah, we'd like to make some money while we're doing it, but basically we're motivated to help other people.
Exactly.
So tell us a little bit about your coaching practice then. Who are your clients? How do you get your clients? Coaches always want to know that. How do I get my clients?
It's hard.
Yeah.
It's hard. It's hard in any industry, especially when you're in a service industry. Here's the biggest challenge with coaching that I found, and I'm sure you can resonate with this. You've been doing it longer than I have. The biggest challenge is explaining what you do. It's education, right? People don't understand. I mean, when you say coach, they think football. And like I said, a coach is a coach is a coach. It doesn't matter what you're doing. A coach is somebody who looks at what you do and tells you how to do it better or suggests ways that you could improve, right? That's what a coach does. And so when I look at coaching as a job, I say, look, there's really three things, like you said, we talked about earlier, off the record. We talked about you need to listen, right? You need to identify areas for improvement, and you need to hold people accountable.
Right.
And that doesn't matter whether you're doing piano coaching or football coaching or business coaching. It's looking at the business from an outside perspective, identifying needs, areas for improvement, and suggesting ways that you might change the way you do your business. And the only way to grow is to change. I don't care what you are. The only way to grow is to change. And so finding the ways where you can change your business positively and eliminate the things that are dragging you down, and then and then acting upon it. You have to do something, right? You have to see a problem, then you have to do something about it. And that's all I got for that.
That's good.
I think I got off track there.
I think you answered. So, any particular niche for clients?
Oh, that was
everybody wants to talk about niches.
Oh, so how do you get clients? Yeah. So how do you get clients? The challenge is explaining what you do, right? So that's what we're going back to. Explain what you're doing means you need to spend a lot of face time with people, right? You need to get in front of them. You can't call. I hear people, oh yeah, just cold call and you'll get clients. And I'm like, this is not a cold calling business. This is not a business where I can pick up a phone and call a CEO and go, hey, I can make your business better. He's not going to buy that, right? He's going to want to have a personal relationship with you. That's his business. That's his lifeblood. It's his baby, right? Or his or her. And they don't want to just freely give up information. If they're not going to tell their employees how much, they're pulling in every year, why would they tell you how much they're pulling in every year? So the transparency isn't always there. And so for them, you have to build trust, right? And so you have to build trust. And how do you build trust with somebody that you don't know? Well, you got to get to know them. So for me, how do I get clients is I do a lot of networking. Networking, referrals, word of mouth. I don't do a lot of postcards and phone calls and things like that because I just don't see the value in that. There's value in doing workshops and doing seminars and things where you get people in a room and they can listen to you speak and they can hear your side of the story. And hopefully you engage them enough where they will want to have a further conversation with you. And it's face-to-face. That's really the only way to do it.
Any online marketing efforts that you use?
Oddly enough, as tech savvy as I am, I don't spend a ton of time. I use a lot of LinkedIn, and I think that's the place where business people are. So I try to expand my connections on LinkedIn. I try to post relevant content on LinkedIn that make people interested in bettering themselves. Educational stuff, right? Again, it's educating people. What is a coach? How does a coach help you? What are some success stories of people who've used a coach? That type of stuff. I don't do a lot. I did a little bit of Google AdWords. Didn't have a lot of success with that. Like I said, coaching is a little bit ephemeral. You have to explain it to people, and just having a little pop-up ad doesn't explain much. And having a website that says, yeah, I can help your business grow 40% a year, that's great. But how do you quantify that? It's what's in it for me. What's in it for the business owner? Why would they want to engage you? And here's another problem I've had. On occasion, I run into somebody who's had a coach before that was not successful, did not help them. And so they're a little bit weary.
Yeah.
Why should I do this again?
Well, I don't want to let you slide by on LinkedIn because, frankly, I think you're a good example of how LinkedIn can be used. I see you posting fairly frequently on LinkedIn. You have some articles of your own. But I think even more important, I see you sharing articles that you think are valuable that other people have generated. All of which, when I'm looking at your profile for the first time and trying to get to know you, starts to give me an impression of who you are and starts to create an impression that, hey, this is a guy I'd like to get to know more. I think this would be interesting to have a dialogue, which is how we ended up
here,
So I think that works very well for you.
Yeah, and talk real quick about LinkedIn. And I have, three kind of things that I like to talk about LinkedIn. And I've heard other people talk about LinkedIn, and I don't think they really get it. I get a lot of spam on there where people ask to be your connection, and then they send you a marketing email as soon as they get the connection. And it's so impersonal, and it's not somebody I really know anyway. And it's the same marketing spiel that they read in a book. I've read the same one. I've probably used it myself. But it's not personal, and it doesn't feel right, right? It's not. And so, like, when you reached out to me, you were very personal, and you say, hey, I have a podcast. I put business coaches on. Is that something you'd be interested in? And I was like, you know what? Tell me a little bit more about that. That does sound interesting. But a lot of people, they're like, hey, I got this great product. It'll make you a ton lot of money and you know, we need to connect and do this and that. And I'm like, you know what? I don't know who you are and I don't want to talk to you. And that's the problem with marketing these days is that people want to build a relationship. They don't just want to be blasted, yes. right? They don't just want to be blasted. So there's three ways that I like using LinkedIn. And one is, like you said, writing my own posts. And I generally do that after I've had a great coaching session. And I just got some great, you know, my mind's just full of great ideas, you know? Like, let me just document, like, you know, take out the person I'm coaching and just write down the story. You know, this is what we found when we dealt with this issue. How does that apply to your business, right? And it's always asking a question at the end, like, how would you use this information, you know, just to try and get people to engage? The second way is to, like you said, to share other people's experiences. I'm doing this I just started this probably a week or two ago called Impossible. And Impossible is really, it's nothing is impossible. And how, it's just showing examples of people doing things that I never personally thought could ever be done.
I saw some of those that you posted, yeah.
So they're pretty fun, and I'm going to keep doing those pretty regularly. And then the third way is just using your network, just going out. You can actually, aside from your personal direct network, joining groups. I think groups is the most valuable thing in LinkedIn. You join a group of somebody who has motorcycles in common with you, has IT in common with you, has business coaching in common with you. You can connect with those people on a more fundamental level.
Okay. All right. Well, look, we're not through, but let's take a quick break for a commercial, and then we will be back in just a minute. And we're back, and we've got with us today David Hilgendorf, and we're talking about technology, we're talking about motorcycles, we're talking about coaching. Who knows what we're going to talk about next? David, we were just getting to the question that we've asked every guest we've ever had on the show for 6 years now. And no pressure here, but we've never had a duplicate answer.
Okay.
And the question is, what is your guiding principle? What experience, what lesson in life have you learned that sort of keeps you on the straight and narrow?
You know, it's put yourself for put yourself out there and pay it forward, right? That what you put out there is what you get back, and that's what I think is my guiding mentality. You know, I started out in life a little bit rough around the edges, and I got into trouble like any good teenage boy should, and I did my share of this and that, and as I got further in life, I realized, you know, I don't want to be that guy. I want to help other people. You know, I want to do better for others, and I want, you know, and it comes back to you. The nicer and the more polite you are, and the more you put out there, you know, then people like you, and the more people like you, the more they give back. So the people that I like the most in my life are the people who are that way to me, right? The people Yes. who give me the most are the ones that I want to give back to. You know, the sooner I realized that, which probably wasn't until I was in my 20s, but I was like, hey, you know, I don't need that much. I'm not really a high maintenance kind of person, right? I don't need to have the fanciest car, the biggest house, or the fastest airplane, or whatever it is that, you know, people are after in life. It's I want to enjoy myself. I want to have a good time. You know, I want to go fast, but I don't need the fastest bike to do that. I have a pretty moderate bike and a pretty moderate truck and a pretty moderate house, and I live in one of the best places on earth, in my opinion. I've lived a lot of different places. Orange County's fantastic. It's warm here. It's sunny most of the time. The weather's been horrible the last 2 days. Hot and humid.
Isn't that the truth?
Hot and humid is not my thing, which is why I moved to California in the first place. So, but yeah, we get this a couple days a year, and it's not bad. So I can ride my motorcycle all year round here. I go surfing all the time. I mountain bike. I mean, so I look for people who have similar interests, people who like to do the things I like to do, who like to talk about the things I like to talk about, who, you know, I can give them some advice, they give me some advice, and we can share and just grow together.
Great. That was not a duplicate answer. That was very original. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. You know, I want to go back to something we were talking about earlier, and you were talking about LinkedIn and the three different ways that you use it. And the thought that went through my mind, and you alluded to it here, but I'd like to hear a little bit more, mm-hmm. is you're using LinkedIn to reach out and connect with people, mm-hmm. to find people of similar interests, whether it's groups or whether it's searching on LinkedIn. But the impression I got in my own experience is you do not create a relationship on LinkedIn. You can make a connection, mm-hmm. but the relationship has got to be developed offline.
Correct.
Would you agree with that?
Absolutely, 100%. So LinkedIn, there's two types of people on LinkedIn. I've heard different... Again, I've talked to a lot of people in the tech world, a lot of people who do social media, and there's two kind of theories on LinkedIn. And the one theory is only connect with people that you know, that you've met in person already, that you have a connection with, existing connection with. That's how I started using LinkedIn. And then I heard another theory, which is connect with everybody. And I said, well, why do you want to do that? And the reason they explained why you want to connect with everybody, even if you don't know them, is it's like Facebook. And I mentioned to you earlier that I don't use Facebook. I don't believe in Facebook. I don't think it's business savvy or business oriented in any way, shape, or form. It's great for showing pictures of your pets and your birthday cakes. But the LinkedIn.
You've seen my site.
I have. Yes. and everyone else's. the great thing about LinkedIn is that. You can connect with people, and it builds your network. It's a spider web. So if you have 500 connections, 500 people see your posts. But if you only connect with people you know, only the people you know are going to see your posts. So it's just like any other social media. Having more connections means it's a broader web for you to hit. And from a marketing standpoint, and again, I don't directly hit everybody with a spam marketing email. I'm just posting stuff that hopefully gathers their interest and generates, you know, leads toward back towards my website or back towards my personal LinkedIn page.
Well, you know, and I think, again, you mentioned it, is that I had a client the other day who was getting ready to go to a trade show and had not been asked to go represent their company at a trade show. And their question was, you know, I'm kind of nervous about this. What do I do there at this trade show? How do I network with people at this trade show? And we talked about it, but I said, you know, it boils down to this. You need to go up to people and find out what can you do to help them.
Exactly.
The minute you ask somebody that question, of course, it's not always that blunt, may not be the first thing you say, but we get around to it. You start to develop the relationship. There's a feeling that you care about me. There's a feeling that you're interested in learning more about me. And all of a sudden, we're starting to make a connection. And what I see people doing with social media is they skip that step. It's like, who are you? What can you buy of mine?
Right. Let me give you an example real quick of how I used LinkedIn to do that. So there's a motorcycle manufacturer that was a new product. It's not on the market yet, and it's in production. And it's pretty high tech, and it's something that's right up my alley. You know, it's high tech, and it's new, and it's motorcycles, so it's right up my alley. And I reached out to him on LinkedIn. And I said, you know what? I did a marketing tour last year for a major motorcycle manufacturer, and I got to experience a lot of interesting, marketing successes and failures. And I said, you know, one of the things that I did, I thought was very successful, and was not even part of my marketing plan. I said, I think what work really well for your business, and I'd love to talk to you about that. That's the email that I sent to him, and he called me back within 30 minutes.
Yeah.
So it's just a matter of you know, how can I help that person do a better job at what their goals, achieving their goals, right?
Yeah, which gets back to the heart of coaching that you've talked about. It's all about how can I help you. You know, if I'm not helping you, I'm not the right coach for you.
Exactly.
You know, if you just want somebody to give you strokes and listen to you and go to lunch, then
that's what a life coach is.
Somebody else. I didn't say that.
No.
I have lots of friends who are nice life coaches.
I have nothing against life coaching. So the first question I probably get when I tell somebody I'm a business coach is, "Oh, that's like life coaching." And I'm like, "Well, it is in a little bit of a way. It is sort of, because we do, you know, we do have to do some of that personal development, but there's a lot more business development. So it's like a life coach plus. There's a lot more to it than just the personal development.
I like to come at that question this way. I like to say, you know, I hear that distinction, but I don't see it. People come to me to coach them on a business problem, but I've almost never coached a client that we didn't talk about something going on in their life that was outside of business.
Absolutely.
But that's not why they come to me.
Right.
That's so.
Yeah, no, I didn't mean to degrade life coaches.
Label me how you want.
Like I said, all coaches are good coaches. I don't care what you're coaching. And, you know, what was I reading today? I don't know if I should talk about this on the show, but I was reading Inc. magazine, and there's a company called, I think it's called TasteUp.us or something. They're coaching orgasms. And they're making $6.5 million a year coaching orgasms. I'm like, that's pretty good business.
Okay, I'm not gonna touch it. I'm moving right along here. It's still early in the evening. Look, we made a couple of claims in our pre-publicity here of things we were going to talk about. Let me just remind you and I. We said we're going to explain why you must constantly adapt your business for sustained growth. You threw out the question, do you know that only 12% of the Fortune 500 companies in 1955 were still on the list 60 years later? That 88% have shuttered or been surpassed or acquired? And then I love this. If you think your company is exempt, think Blockbuster Video or AOL. What is Uber doing to taxi cab industry? What's Tesla doing to automotive? How do you keep your business ahead of the curve? I'd like the answer to all of those questions, David.
You know, if I had the answer to all those questions, I would be one of the guys running those companies, I think. You know, it's where you're taking technology and you're, you know, they use the word disruption in the tech in the business field. Oh, you're disrupting the existing status quo. You're disrupting your, but really what it is, it's if you look at Moore's Law, and those are familiar with Intel, Gordon Moore wrote this law, in the 60s, and it basically says that technology doubles performance and halves in price every 18 months. And I think it's about 24 months at this point. But the law is held for 60 years.
Okay.
And so if you think about if the technology you have today will be twice as fast and half the price in 2 years, what will that allow you to do, right? And that's what these business entrepreneurs, these venture capitals and capitalists and these business entrepreneurs in the tech field are doing is they're looking at the existing infrastructure and saying, hey, here is something that hasn't changed in 100 years. How can I apply technology to that? And what will that do to that business? And so if you look at Netflix, you know, it started out, they shipped DVDs in the mail. And that was a little bit of a thorn in Blockbuster's side. Well, then they started streaming DVDs over the internet. And that was a bigger thorn in Blockbuster's side. And Blockbuster started having troubles. And then it wasn't even Netflix, I think, that killed Blockbuster. I think they knocked them over. And then Redbox came along and put the nail in the coffin. Now you can get a DVD at your grocery store, at your CVS or your Walgreens, anywhere you go. You know,
right.
You go to the gas station and get a DVD now. So why do you need to go to Blockbuster anymore? And I think after Redbox came out, that's when you saw Blockbuster just went down the tubes. So Netflix, like I said, they hobbled them, and Redbox put the nail in the coffin. So if you look at over the other ones, like AOL. I mean, you used to get if you're around as long as I am, you probably get an AOL disc or two in your mailbox at one point in your life. I think that I probably got several dozen of them over the years, you know, and everybody did. I mean, they sent out millions and millions of those things. They had more internet subscribers than anybody could count, right? And everybody thought, well, you know, that's great. That's awesome. Let's, you know, and I think Time Warner paid billions and billions of dollars for AOL. Now it's a free service, you know, it's a portal to the internet, and it's like a Gmail, you know, it's people who use it are the ones who are leftovers who never got off of it back when it was, when they had the discs, you know, back in the day.
You know, I have to share this. My wife was watching a movie. I wandered into the room and I kind of caught my eye, and I sat there for a while this weekend, and it was the old movie, Tom Hanks, You've Got Mail.
Mm-hmm.
And they were talking at some scene in it, and they're going, you've got mail. And I thought, you know, there was a time when that saying got your attention. When the computer said, you've got mail, you were interested. Today, the thing everybody wants to get rid of is, how do I get rid of email?
Right? I can't tell you how many times I go through my mailbox and go, unsubscribe, unsubscribe, unsubscribe. I do it about once a quarter just to get rid of all the spam that's in there. Yeah, it's ridiculous. And other companies, Tesla, I mean, they're taking the batteries and plug-in power to the next level. They're spending a ton of money building an infrastructure. And the biggest problem with moving from internal combustion engines, and this is motorcycle or automobile, the biggest problem is the infrastructure. There's no way to charge or replace the batteries efficiently, so the range is not long enough. You can't drive across the country.
Yeah.
And so what Tesla's doing is they're building the infrastructure that you can charge your car in an hour anywhere in the country, and once they've got that in place, and in a year, I think in 2 years, they're going to have a $35,000 car. So now you have a $35,000 car that doesn't use gas and can be charged in your garage or anywhere in the country. How is that not going to disrupt the automotive industry?
I was blown away the other day. I was going over to the local Costco in Fountain Valley, and they've just installed in the Costco parking lot a whole row of Tesla charging stations.
Yep.
And I went there one day and they were putting them in, and I'm going, yeah, really, this is, you need how many Tesla charging stations at a Costco?
Right.
And I went back the next day, and they were all full with Teslas.
And here's an interesting piece of knowledge about Tesla cars. They're huge here in Southern California, and everybody's got them. You see them all over the place. I went to a business owner here locally who sells used cars, and he goes to auction, buys used cars, and resells them here. And he's got a bunch of Teslas on his lot. I'm like, how do you have used Teslas on your lot? You know, and he's not even like a branded car dealer. He just sells used cars, right?
Okay.
And I'm like, how do you have all these Teslas on your lot? And he goes, well, people up in like Seattle and Washington and Portland, they buy them. They think they're awesome. You know, they all tech up there and they've got all that stuff, but they don't have the infrastructure there yet. So they buy them and then they can't charge them anywhere. And he goes, so they sell them at auction and I pick them up cheap and then I resell them down here where everybody wants one, you know, because we got the infrastructure. So
it seems to me that one of the, for a business coach, one of the key tasks for a business coach is to get the business executive to take a deep breath and look around and see where technology can be used.
Yeah.
Because they're so busy solving the daily problems that they many times don't step back and take a longer view of where things can be going. And I'm sure you see this all the time.
To put an even more perspective on that, the business coach's job is to get you from doing get the business owner to stop doing the daily tasks. Like, if you're a business owner and you're still balancing your own checkbook, you need to hire a bookkeeper. You know, that is a task that's wasting your time that you could be developing and growing your business. If you are still packing and shipping your sales orders, as a business owner, that's something you can hire somebody, you know, a college intern or you know, $15 an hour employee to pack your boxes and ship them. You don't need to do that yourself. So the biggest challenge I think for the business owner is getting out of that role, getting out of the role of being the every piece of the business, and you know, recognizing that the only way to grow is to hand off those responsibilities successfully, and then move on to the next thing. And moving on to the next thing, and these days with technology, it's so easy. I mean, these companies are popping up left and right that make your bookkeeping online easy, that make your shipping online easy, that make your you know, your HR, you can do without even having an HR person in-house now. You do it online, right? You can hire a personal assistant online. I mean, you can do any of this stuff. So it's so easy and it's so cost-effective. Why on earth are you still spending 40 hours a week doing that and then 40 hours a week growing your business? Why don't you just do one?
See, I think we need to come up with another word other than technology, because the word technology to many business owners means I'm going to invest some money in something cutting edge that may or may not work.
Okay.
And I think that's not what we're talking about. The technology that's already out there that's being utilized, all we're saying is, have you thought of using a technology from one industry and applying it in a different way to your industry?
Sure.
Existing tried and true technology, using it for something different. I mean, look at the RDF chips that were generated to stick in the cow's ears so that the farmer could find out or the where my cows are out in the field.
Mm-hmm.
And now they're being used on packages, so we know where the packages are going when the shipper's using it.
Yeah, I mean, and that's, you know, people want to know where their products are coming from. You know, people are getting fed up with made in China, made in India, made in Vietnam, made in Mexico. They want to know where especially their foods are being sourced, right? And they have a right to know. They have a right to know those things. And technology can make that easy for them, right? And that's like you said, you can tag the cow and follow it from the day it's born until the day you eat it. So why not do that, right?
Yeah.
I read an article probably a couple of years ago that was talking about how there's some new startup company that was using satellite data imagery to look at the history of crop growth in the Midwest. So they could sell farmers data on where to plant which types of crops. I mean, that's genius information, right? And that's using data, it's using technology and history that we've already been tracking, right, in order to improve your business, in order to do better. There's so many opportunities for that kind of thing.
I was in a client's office this morning. He is a private pilot.
Mm-hmm.
So on his laptop, he has got a program, I don't know the name of it, that is a super-duper weather tracking program, both current on real-time weather,
mm-hmm.
And also forecasts, mm-hmm. the kind of stuff that you'd have to have if you're a pilot. He was spending yesterday at his desk looking at this program and on the phone with his superintendent at the construction site down in South County, warning him about, okay, we're exposed, we've excavated this great big hole, I'm watching the cells around you. You have 20 minutes. So he's using the current technology that was developed for flying an airplane to warn him about, don't waste your time putting up Visqueen. There's this huge wind coming down that you haven't seen yet, but it's a few miles away.
Yeah, and so it's that real time, and we're getting to that point now where, I mean, you look at the tsunami warnings, right? They can tell when there's an earthquake halfway across the Pacific when the waves are going to hit California or Japan or Hawaii or whatever it is. I mean, so we can't predict every, you know, earthly disaster at this point in time, but we're getting to that point where our data is getting strong enough to, the predictions are getting more accurate, yeah. You know? And when we can predict weather patterns, like El Nino, this year they're predicting El Nino, right? Here in Orange County, we're going to get tons of rain, and we haven't had any in 4 years. So, because the patterns are, you know, we've been tracking it long enough, and it's significant enough of a differentiation from the norm that they can say, yes, we're expecting that this is going to happen this year. So, yeah, that's data, right? That's computer, that's technology. So
one of the statements you made here is, how can you keep your business ahead of the curve? How do we keep our businesses ahead of the curve in technology?
Well, you need to think about, is it something that's of interest to you? I mean, every business owner runs their business differently. Every business owner doesn't necessarily have the same means and ends, what they're trying to accomplish. If your goal is to grow, then you need to change. And as I said that earlier, if you want to grow, you need to change. And if you don't adapt to the technology that's out there, somebody will do it and beat you to it, and you'll be Blockbuster or AOL. Somebody will knock you off of your throne. I don't care if you're the best company in the world. Somebody will come along and knock you off your throne, and they're probably going to use technology to do it. So the question is, do you want to continue doing the same thing you've been doing and just hope that nobody comes along and realizes that your taxi cab industry is ripe for picking and comes out with Uber?
Okay.
Right? Or that your you know, DVD rental industry is ripe for picking and comes out with online streaming, which is, you know, nobody's going to be buying DVDs in 10 years. Everything's going to be on the internet, right? So you have to look at your business and go, how can I stay ahead of that curve, right? What is happening in my industry? What is happening in competitive industries? I mean, the movie industry should have seen this coming, because the music industry got wiped out 20 years ago, right? You know, the iTunes came along and gone. You know, they don't make albums anymore. They make singles. It used to be you buy the single and then you buy the album. Now you buy the single and you never buy an album because there aren't any. Irony is that things come back around. I walk by a Barnes & Noble today and they're advertising vinyl. So I don't get it, but, you know, vinyl's coming back, so that's cool. You know, I think some of the manufacturing is going to come back to the U.S. too. So, I mean, there's going to be opportunities there for using technology to get back into manufacturing, because the technology is more efficient than human, and humans are the most expensive cost of your business. So, you know, they're expensive in labor costs, they're expensive in human resources costs, and once you buy a piece of equipment and maintain it properly, it can last a long time. So, I mean, that's how these automotive industry has gotten so successful, is they've automated a lot of their process. So,
sure.
If you automate your process and you document what you're doing, and you hire people that can do that for you or show you how to do it, and that could be a consultant, that could be a business coach, that could be, you know, somebody, an operational, you know, procedure person, but bring somebody in who can just show you the ropes and teach you how to take what you've got and make it into the next great thing. Because if you want to keep doing it the same way, that's fine. It'll work. But you're going to keep getting the same results you always got.
You know, one of the things I love to do is when I'm in a client's office and I hear they've got a new employee that's only been there for a couple of weeks or a month or something, is I love to talk to that new employee about how they see the company. Because mm-hmm. they've got fresh eyes. Mm-hmm. And they see the things that are so obvious that the people that have been there for 5 years don't see anymore.
Right.
You know, and I just don't know how to get that unless you bring in somebody from outside.
Somebody fresh.
Mm-hmm. Fresh to take a look at it.
Yeah.
And expose it.
And that's exactly what a coach is, right?
Yep,
it's a fresh set of eyes. It's a fresh set of eyes. You come in and you look at a business consultant or a life coach or a business coach, and it's the same thing. You look
at
the problem.
Did you say life coach? Are you going to support the life coaches now?
I do support the life coach. I have no problem with the life coach. And again, it's the personal side of things. And improving your personal side is going to improve your business side too. I mean, they go hand in hand. I mean, there's your spiritual side, there's your personal side, there's your business side, and then there's your health, right? So, I mean, if you get all four of those things in order, your life's going to be great. You know, if any one or two of those is out of balance, then you're going to struggle with that. And so the point is, how do you get your life in balance? And it does take life coaching. It does take business coaching. It does take health coaching. I mean, how many people have a health coach? You go down to the gym and they teach you how to get healthy, right? That's what they do. Why not have that for your business too?
Hey, I think that's a great kind of summary of what we're talking about today. That may be the best summary of coaching that I've heard.
Mm-hmm.
balancing those four areas of your life. Wonderful. Look, we're getting close to wrapping up. What else would you like to talk about that we haven't got to, that you want to share with the audience, or that I may have sidetracked you on?
I could probably sidetrack myself more than anybody else does. I can get off on a tangent. The challenge is that the business owners don't understand the value of that, like you said, that third, the extra set of eyes, the fresh perspective. Ask your new employees, right? Spend some time. I think the best thing, the biggest problem with business meetings is they're broken. You go in there and here's what you need to do. Go into your business meeting next time as a business owner and say, how can I help you do your job better? Ask your employees. See what they say. You know, listen to them. It's not that complicated. Coach them, right? Mentor them. Mentor your employees. Coach your employees. Get some coaching yourself. I mean, my favorite video that I bandy about at the internet is CEO of Google saying everybody needs a coach, right? Everybody needs a coach. And I don't care what you do. If you want to be better at it, somebody needs to look at you with a fresh set of eyes, whether that's an employee or a mentor or a coach, life coach, business coach, personal coach, health coach. Look at what you're doing and say, hey, you could do better if you changed this or that or the other thing, or you tried this or that. And you know what? You try a bunch of stuff. Some of it's not going to work. Great. That's fine. If it doesn't work, toss it. But if it does work, do it again. Do it more. Find something else that works. And just keep looking for those changes, those incremental little bit. Change 1% at a time, right? Incrementally, if you change 1% at a time, eventually you're going to double whatever you're doing.
Great. David, how do people get a hold of you?
So you can go on my LinkedIn, David Hilgendorf. It's LinkedIn/in/David Hilgendorf. Easy. That's where easiest place to get a hold of me. David.Hilgendorf. DHilgendorf@focalpointcoaching.com is my Focal Point Coaching email address. Like I said, you won't find me on Facebook. I do have an account there, but I don't use it, so don't try to reach out to me. He wants me to spell my last name. Hilgendorf is HILGENDORF. And that is kind of a brutal. D. Hilgendorf, HILGENDORF @focalpointcoaching.com is my email address. And my website is more just a point back to my social media, because I don't really do a lot on the website, but it's drhilgendorf.com. There you go. Not at there. So, yeah, simple stuff. Use LinkedIn. That's where I'm on most, and that's where I like to interface with businesses, because that's where the business people are.
Great. David, thank you very much for joining us today. It's been a fascinating conversation. I love the variety that you've got in your life, and the mix of technology, motorcycles, and coaching, and mostly your excitement for what you're doing. Boy, it really, if the audience didn't pick it up, I've enjoyed our conversation. Before and during the show.
Thank you so much. So
thank you for joining us today. Well, this is Doug Gefeller. Hope you've enjoyed the show today. Hope you've got information out of it that you can use to put to work immediately to achieve your goals and your objectives. If you've enjoyed this broadcast, be sure to check out our Podbean site, or dgefeller, that's dgefeller.podbean.com, or you can go to my website, thecoachingperspective.com. You can hear this show if you tuned in late. You can hear it in full. We'll have it up on Monday. If you'd like to listen to some of our past shows, they're all at the same location. So just visit us there, and we've enjoyed having you today. David, thanks, and welcome to the Coaching Perspective radio show community.
Thank you so much.
Have a great evening.
You've been listening to the one show that takes a look at business from a different perspective, The Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.